crossroads of empires, battleground of the ages, city of peace and of war. This is Jerusalem, where archaeology uncovers the empires of yesterday, where prophecy decodes the headlines of today. This is where history and prophecy come alive. This is Watch Jerusalem.
Welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. I'm your host, Brent Nuchtiger. We're coming to you today, of course, from Jerusalem, Israel. A big thank you to Christopher Eames, who took the program last week and discussed the Mesha Stele, the Moabite stone, and he discussed the Moabites as well, along with that, in the context of the Moabites, ancient people that lived alongside the Israelites, and mentioned quite a lot in the Bible. I really do encourage you to go back and listen to last week's program. It was just half an hour, very bite-sized for you to really educate yourself on some of these peoples that the Bible discusses and also that archaeology has confirmed. I do want to thank Chris as well for putting the time in to write about these civilizations of the biblical past. He's done the Philistines, and he's also done the Moabites, and he's going to move on to other different ancient peoples, and you can look for those on watchjerusalem.co.il. Just click on the archaeology tab and they should be right up there. Well, today we're going to take a bit of a detour away from archaeology to talk about the dangerous situation Israel now finds itself in. I'm talking about the dangerous situation it finds itself in along the borders of the country. We hear a lot about how the Israelis are besieging Gaza, and yet there is a greater besiegement that's going on right now, and that is of Israel itself. Whether you're talking about the threat that Hamas poses from the Gaza Strip in Israel's southwest, or even down into the Sinai Peninsula, you've got a number of jihadist groups, including the Islamic State of the Sinai, that have even of late fired rockets into Israeli territory, targeting cities and towns of the Israelis. And then if you go into the north, we have Hezbollah here that has regrouped to a way that if it decides to fire its missiles and its rockets on Israel, we know that all of Israel can now be targeted by these rockets. And depending on the speed at which they fire these or the frequency in which they fire them down, the defense systems that Israel has currently set up won't be able to handle it. And then really just add that, those two threats or three threats to what's going on in Syria, as we've had a number of reports that are talking about, as the Syrian civil war winds down and Iran establishes a firmer hold over the Damascus government, Damascus again being a close city to Israel's Golan Heights on the Golan, the Syrian side of the Golan. Then we have this border region of Syria and Israel in the northeast of the country that is also a major threat. Well, today we're going to discuss those threats and the likelihood of an upcoming war. It's something we don't necessarily want to talk about or like to talk about, but we are due, especially if we look on Israel's southwestern front towards the Gaza Strip. We are due for some type of military some type of war. It's a war, really, where Hamas fires rockets, tries to infiltrate into Israeli territory through terror tunnels, as we'll cover. And what it seems is that we are gearing up for another one of these bouts, another round. And each time what we've seen are these rounds of fighting, whether it's 2012, 14, or whether it's this year, whether it's really soon, they do intensify in their lethality and how lethal they are, especially with the new weapon systems that Hamas has been developing. And it is a dangerous and worrying sign. And Israel is taking some precautions, even organizing some evacuation plans of what they're going to do in the event that not just Hamas fires across their rockets, their missiles, their mortars, but also if Hezbollah decides to join them. And now we've got this other front, where before Syria wouldn't really want to act in this way against Israel, fearing the Israeli military and the Israeli Air Force. But now we have a number of Iranian proxies that are located on the Golan Heights towards Israel's northeast. Now, they are much more free from the government in Damascus to act according to Iran's will. And what is Iran's goal? Iran's goal, again, is Jerusalem. So we have a number of these threats. But I would like to just start with what's going on with Hamas inside the Gaza Strip. And I'd like to quote, I'm going to quote a number of articles today just to show you the frequency. Most of these articles are from the last 2 weeks, just to show you the frequency of how often developments are being reported on in the media, and then also the army itself, the training that it's undergoing right now to try and equip itself to face these very real threats. Now, if we're talking about the Israeli military, pound for pound against any of these terrorist groups, they could win. They could win decisively. But it's not necessarily about Israel being pushed into the sea right now. It's about how much damage can these mini armies inflict on Israel in terms of civilian casualties, in terms of Israel's image as a powerful military force. They can do a lot. Now, I'm going to quote this article. It's by Daniel Shapiro. He's obviously the former ambassador of the United States to Israel. And he wrote this week in Bloomberg View an article entitled "All Signals Point Once Again to War in Gaza." He starts off this way. "The next war in Gaza is coming. In over 5 years as U.S. ambassador to Israel, I found no issue more impervious to solutions than Gaza. We were constantly preventing, managing, or responding to crises, trying to head off terror attacks by Hamas and others, supporting Israel's right to defend itself, negotiating ceasefires, and working to alleviate human suffering." And that is true. What do you do? What do you do with what's going on right now? You can try and stop weapons from entering that little fiefdom of Hamas there on the Gaza Strip, but now they create them themselves. They create their own rockets. And as we'll see, they are becoming more and more lethal. Then he writes, "I also learned that Gaza wars follow a kind of routine. Hamas upgrades its attack capabilities and tensions build. Both sides prefer to avoid an escalation, but some incident, perhaps unintended, leads to Hamas to increase the rate of rockets fired into Israel. Eventually, Israel deems the provocations intolerable and launches a heavier response, such as when it conducted a targeted strike on Hamas military wing chief Ahmed Jabiri at the start of Operation Pillar Defense in 2012. A full-on conflict ensues, with ceasefire negotiations competing with Hamas's rockets and tunnel attacks, Israeli airstrikes, and calls from the Israeli public for a ground invasion to finish the job." This happens so often. This happens every couple of years. 2012, 2014, and now it's 2017. And then he writes, "Unhappily, there are growing signs that this cycle is about to start anew. Rockets are fired by Salafist groups into Israel, actions that Hamas either permits or fails to prevent, and Israel responds with carefully placed airstrikes." He writes, "Few casualties have resulted on either side so far, but the exchanges are now coming every few days. Hamas itself sends test launches of upgraded rockets out to sea. In plain sight from the Israeli border, Hamas brazenly digs new tunnels, terror tunnels. And he writes, "There's at least 15 of them right now that extend into Israeli territory." Now, if you have a family on the border of Gaza, especially northern Gaza, you're worried about these terror tunnels. And deservedly, or rightfully so. Then he writes, "Israeli patrols periodically encounter explosives placed along the border fence." That's happened in the last month. Then again, Daniel Shapiro, writing for Bloomberg View, says this: "The new leader of Hamas in Gaza, Yahya Sinwar, is considered to be a hardliner and closer to the Al-Qassam military wing of the movement than his predecessor. If the movement comes to demonstrate that Hamas can stand up to the pressure from Israel, the leadership will likely be influenced by the movement's extreme factions." It's saying that the military wing of Hamas, if it is able to prove itself in war against the Israelis, then the movement's extreme factions are going to rise in power. He writes then that it might be a bad time, it seems, for Hamas to escalate the situation, given that it is trying to change its public image, potentially changing its charter, so it's not anti-Semitic as much. But then he writes this: "But nothing about Hamas's ideology of armed struggle to destroy Israel has fundamentally changed. It hasn't changed. It still wants to destroy Israel. It's just going to try and be less anti-Semitic about it, if that's possible. Then he writes, nor has its need to compete with Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas's Fatah party for the loyalty of the Palestinians. So what he's saying there is something that's Israelis are very familiar with, the fact that if you can prove yourself to be successful in battle against the Israelis, then the Palestinian public flocks to support you. If Hamas can look at itself or can show itself as the true defender of the Palestinian people in war with Israel, that does well for its public support amongst Palestinians, even in the West Bank. Now, this is something that I couldn't really understand that well till about 2012, this idea that a violent uprising against the Jews actually increases the popularity of the Palestinian group that's inflicting those wounds, that the people would flock, that the Palestinian people would flock in support of such a group. This came more clear to me back in 2012. I was over here in Israel, in Jerusalem. We were excavating at the UFL. Again, in 2012, when the air raid sirens came over in Jerusalem. This happened a number of times during that war. Once, I think it was a Friday evening, just before sunset, the air raid sirens came on. I think it was the first time that they had come on in about a decade or so in Jerusalem. And I ran outside, you could hear the thud. You could hear the thud. Now, they were on the outskirts of Jerusalem, these missiles. I think they were missiles. I don't think rockets can go that far. Nevertheless, we heard the thud. And then a few days later, we were on the dig site during the middle of the day, again in Jerusalem, and this is right at the southern wall of the Temple Mount, before you get to the City of David, looking across the valley to the Mount of Olives, across Wadi Jos, the Kidron Valley, in the Palestinian dominated town of Silwan, or village of Silwan. And we took cover when we heard the air raid sirens again. We jumped into the mikvot, the ritual baths, Jewish ritual baths from 2,000 years, just to try and, you know, if it got close, at least we would be in a foxhole, a 2,000-year-old foxhole. And then eventually the air raid sirens went off. But then what did we hear? We heard cheering, shouts of joy, and the occasional firecracker and firework. And where was it coming from? It was coming from across the valley, from these Palestinians that were excited at the fact that a random missile or a rocket had been sent towards Jerusalem. Now, I don't know if they have a death wish, but these projectiles, they aren't that precise, and they had just as much chance of landing on their heads as they did ours across the valley, and yet they were excited about this. They were happy about this. And in, you know, East Jerusalem, and typically Hamas hasn't had as much favor as Fatah, and yet Hamas was the one that launched this rocket. And it's easy to see that if they are powerful enough to dent Israel, then they could easily gain more control over the Palestinian groups. Anyhow, we are gearing up for another war. If you've been going to watchjerusalem.co.il, you'll see we've had a number of articles, especially just this past week, one written by Callum Wood that talks about the upgraded equipment that Hamas now has over there. And they have already, earlier this year, I think it was back in January, there was an article that came out that talked about how that Hamas is more as militarily capable as it was at the end of the 2014 war. It's back up to it has the same stockpile or more of weapons. It has the terror tunnels. It even has a number of commando naval units that are trying to infiltrate Israel. We'll talk about that in a second as well. And they have these upgraded projectiles. I don't have the article in front of me, but you can go to watchjerusalem.co.il. It's on the front page there. It's actually, I posted it to one of a social media outlet, And it's getting a lot of response. It's getting a lot of response from people here in Israel and then also people around the world, because Hamas is preparing itself for a different battle from back in 2014. You remember 2014? That is when the Iron Dome, Israel's savior, if you could call it that, and it is looked upon as a savior right now, the Iron Dome system. There's currently 10 of them in use throughout Israel, and they are movable, portable, and they can shoot down in an amazing feat of engineering these rockets and bigger projectiles that come out of the Gaza Strip, and they can shoot them down. And that's what they did back in 2014, up to 90% of the projectiles fired out of the Gaza Strip, and there was about 4,000 or 5,000 of them during that war were shot out of the sky. It is an amazing feat of engineering. The Israeli army, I think it was built in conjunction with the United States, and it can determine whether or not this rocket or projectile is going to hit a population center. If it deems it is, then it will try and shoot it out of the air and shoot it out of the air in a way that it doesn't land on anybody underneath it. So quite amazing and very successful. And yet what we're seeing right now is Hamas, realizing that, has learned that it needs to change its military hardware. Now, the Iron Dome system is not that effective when it's trying to shoot short-range rockets out of the sky and mortars. It's very difficult to do that because it has little time. It's got to locate the target. It's got to do its computation to figure out how to attack it or whether to attack it, and then go fly up and attack it before it hits the ground. And for many of the Israeli communities that live right underneath the Gaza Strip, the Iron Dome system just isn't fast enough. So what is Hamas doing? Well, they've decided to create shorter range rockets that have a bigger payload. Up to a couple of hundred kilograms of explosives can be carried by these. And they have a dozen or so of them right now, apparently. That's what Israeli army reported just this past week. And they might be able to slip under the Iron Dome and really attack these towns that are on the border, like Sderot, that's got 24,000 people, that has about 15 seconds to, well, public there have about 15 seconds, as most Israelis know, to escape a fired rocket from the Gaza Strip. And here we have larger rockets that aren't designed to go further anymore, because they can have already proven that they can hit most of the southern front of Israel. Now they're just short range, packing a whole lot more punch. That's what Hamas has been doing since 2014, designing some of these. What else have they been doing? They've also, of course, been busy digging more of these terror tunnels. Now Israel is trying to prepare for these terror tunnels. They have at least 15 of them, as I was saying before, that now, right now, enter into Israel, that reach all the way into Israel. And when we come back, we're going to see what Israel is planning on doing to try and counteract that threat. We'll take a short break, and then we'll be back.
KPCG 101.3, Trumpet Radio, is your source of understanding. Trumpet Radio broadcasts from the campus of Herbert W. Armstrong College in Edmond, Oklahoma, and online at kpcg.fm. Thank you for listening. They call it the City of Peace. But it is filled with violence. Yesterday, bloody crusades and sieges. Today, terrorism, rocket attacks, and stabbings. Intense international pressure, but no diplomatic solutions. This is Jerusalem. No city has suffered like it. Will there ever be peace? God says yes. There will be peace in Jerusalem. and not just for the Jews. It will be a peace that spreads to all people. How will God bring peace to Jerusalem? Request your free copy of Jerusalem in Prophecy to find out. The answer comes straight from your Bible. Peace is coming soon. Act today. Please visit thetrumpet.com. This is Watch Jerusalem.
Welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. I'm your host, Brent Nuchtigal, and we're talking about the threats that Israel faces out of the north, south, east, and west, all over. And specifically before the break, we're talking about the terror tunnels, 15 of which that are being built, that are built already into Israel. This is what this article, how it starts out. It's called Amid Hamas Threats, Elite Israeli Commandos Prepare for Next Gaza War. While renewed hostilities only 3 years after the last round are seen by some as inevitable, there are still many reasons for restraint on both sides. That's how it starts out. But the IDF has not been idle. At the forefront of its preparations is the expansion of one unit in particular, the Special Operations Engineering Unit, referred to by its acronym Yahalom, Diamond in Hebrew. It continues, in any future conflict in Gaza, it will be the soldiers of Yahalom who will, in a literal sense, take the lead. Among other delicate missions, they will be tasked with going below ground to fight inside Hamas's vast tunnel network. It already exists. And now we've got a special commando unit, engineer commando unit in Israel that is going to try and take them out. Will be used in battle. These soldiers inside these terror tunnels. The man tasked with getting Yahalom ready for the next war is the unit's head of training, a lieutenant colonel we will simply call O, in accordance with army protocol. Sitting in his office at a sprawling army base in central Israel, O made clear from the start that things have dramatically changed since 2014's Operation Protective Edge. Despite sending a massive ground force of three divisions into the cramped coastal territory, the IDF found itself lacking the one specialty it sorely needed, elite engineering commandos. Lessons were learned, and Yahalom was expanded from a simple battalion into a brigade-sized force with an ultimate plan to triple the size of the unit. O stated with pride that Yahalom conducted 10 times as many operations in 2016 than any prior year. No false small feat for a unit that has existed since Israel's founding in 1948. So we have an expansion of this engineers corps that is going to participate in the next war. And I don't know if we should feel good about this. It's good to take precautions, of course. But these Israeli soldiers, they're going to be sent into these terror tunnels. This new unit, there's one of them called Samur, a weasel unit, they are assigned to dealing with these Gaza tunnels. I'll continue quoting here. It says, O is training these commandos to fight Hamas deep underground in constricted spaces with little oxygen and less light. Like much else about Yahalom, the precise details of this work remains shrouded in secrecy. O did say that Weasel members have to learn a wide range of skills, such as rappelling down into the tunnels as a team, deploying robots and other classified technological systems, and destroying tunnel openings. So these terror tunnels have necessitated a new unit in the Israeli military, and apparently people are lining up. They're volunteers, all of these people that join this unit. They're lining up to participate. And you would, if you wanted to protect your family in this way, that's what you would do. I'm not against in any way the protection of civilians. They need to be protected. But this is what Israel's having to do to counter a terrorist entity that is fully committed to the next war against Israel. They've still got their terror tunnels working. They've still got the missiles, they've still got their rockets, and they are threatening. And they are threatening verbally as well. This is another article just from this past week. This past Wednesday, this is from Israel Hayom. Hamas on Tuesday continued to threaten retaliation against Israel for killing Mazen, one of its high-profile officials last week. So you remember this, that one of their leadership was killed, assassinated, it looks, in the Gaza Strip, this near Gaza City, just this past week. And Hamas said that they believe, at least initially, they were saying that Israel has changed the rules of the game by killing him in this way. And so they've threatened revenge on Israel coming soon, is what they said. That's what the Hamas military wing said. Revenge on Israel coming soon. And while we don't know if this was Israel or not, Israeli soldiers, it seems that they believe now, Hamas does, that it might have been a collaborator inside the Gaza Strip that was working with Israel. They basically sealed off Gaza. Hamas did, not Israel. Hamas sealed off Gaza this past week for a few days, didn't let anything in or out to try and catch whoever did this. They're unable to do it so far. And they've started to let at least medical supplies in and out, medical staff in and out. But not if you're, I think, between 25 and 50. If you're a man, you're stuck in the Gaza Strip. So this isn't an Israeli blockade. This is what Hamas is now doing. But they said revenge is coming. It's coming soon. And back in 2014, they fired 5,000 about rockets on Israel. Now they've got that mount plus more. The terror tunnels are back. And now they have greater punch to their short-range rockets. So that's what Hamas now has. That's how they're equipped. They're ready for another fight. But that's just little Hamas in the southwestern part of Israel in the Gaza Strip. What about the north? What about Hezbollah? While we may think of them as just a terrorist proxy group of the Iranians, they have 150,000 rockets or missiles, projectiles, ready to be fired down onto Israel. Yeah, you heard that right, 150,000. Now, in the 2006 Lebanon-Israeli war, there were 4,000 rockets that were fired into Israel. Just 4,000. I mean, 4,000 is 4,000 too many, and 4,000 caused 44 Israeli civilian deaths. And in that war, there were also 121 Israeli soldiers that were killed as they bombarded northern Israel with these rockets. That was just 4,000. Now they have 150,000 of them. 150,000. They also have the ability to construct these rockets and these missiles themselves. There was an article that was released earlier this year, and we've got an article on it on watchjerusalem.co.il. It's entitled "The Danger of Hezbollah's New Weapons Autonomy." Based on a Kuwaiti daily, it says that the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, the IRGC, they have revealed that Hezbollah has weapon production plants inside Lebanon, in the south of Lebanon. And this just came a couple of weeks after the Iranian defense minister said that Hezbollah now possesses the capability to build and produce any projectile or missile to strike Israel. So we're hearing a lot about how Israel is flying jets into Syria, into Palmyra, into the Syrian part of the Golan Heights, north, across the Lebanese mountains to attack convoys of weapons that are coming from Iran to get to Hezbollah. And yet, Hezbollah already has the ability to produce a lot of these weapons, maybe not the most destructive, the new ones, the game-changing ones that they're getting from Iran. But all the type of missiles that they sent down into Israel, the 4,000 during the Second Lebanon War, they're producing them themselves right now inside southern Lebanon, according to the IRGC. These factories are at least 50 meters underground, and that is impervious to Israeli airstrikes. 50 meters underground, that's quite far down. And even if that isn't untrue, like they say, I mean, an airstrike in southern Lebanon, these weapons facilities are likely underneath civilian structures, just like the rest of what Hezbollah has done, or their launching pads, which are on purpose put right next to civilian structures, in schools, in hospitals, so that Israel, where if they attack them, they'll be knocking down or attacking a civilian structure. So now we have them with these their own weapons factories. And they already have, again, 150,000 weapons that are ready to go. Now, I want to quote from a piece. This is another one from thetower.org. And it's discussing a white paper that was produced earlier this year, or actually late last year, and it was written by some of the best voices out of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, Jonathan Schnanzer, Tony Badron, and David Dowd. They write on Israel quite a lot in Israel's precarious military situation right now. And this is the paper that originally reported that Hezbollah had 150,000 rockets all ready to go, missiles ready to go to attack Israel with. But then they say this, or this, the Tower report on that report says this: given Hezbollah's arsenal and its threats to strike at Haifa, Tel Aviv, and other sites inside Israel, the Israeli government and military is, quote, preparing for large numbers of rockets, not to mention heavy casualties and damage, and is talking in terms of thousands of civilian deaths. Thousands. That's what we're looking at. If Hezbollah decides at some point to get out of the Syrian civil war, the mess that they're in at the behest of, again, their leader in Iran, and they return back to southern Lebanon, or they're mobilized by Iran to do so, they could send down some of these 150,000 bombs or missiles, and Israel's preparing itself for thousands of casualties. That's what the Israeli military says. Now, what Israel is scrambling in a way to try and stop this, David Sling's about to come online, the big brother to the Iron Dome system that's meant to help out a lot to try and blow these projectiles out of the sky. And then we also have the Iron Dome being set up in ships. I think there's four ships being constructed in Germany right now. And originally, there was only going to be one Iron Dome system on each of these ships that will just be just off the coast of Lebanon in northern Israel. Now, responding to what Hezbollah is doing, they're going to put two. They're putting two batteries on each one of these ships to try and hopefully take some of these rockets and missiles out of the sky before they hit Israeli civilian targets. So that's what's coming out of the north. That's the threat, the ever-present threat that exists. And Hezbollah, they have got a whole lot more training in these past 5 years. They've been involved in the Syrian civil war since 2012. That's a lot of training for their men. That's a lot of training with new weaponry. And that's a lot of training in urban warfare as well. They are some of the most successful ground forces in the Syrian civil war, fighting on behalf of the Iranians. They are, and now they're going to bring that military prowess back with them. Now, they've lost over 1,000 men, but there's still enough. There's still enough troops, Hezbollah troops, inside southern Lebanon. And just as a matter of comparison, 150,000 rockets or missiles that they're able to rain down everywhere in Israel, not just the north anymore. They can hit anywhere in Israel. That is more than every single other NATO or other NATO country besides the United States has. This is not just some little terrorist group that we might think about when we hear Hezbollah or Hamas. Hezbollah is far bigger of the two. It has more of these rockets. Yeah, granted, they probably aren't as powerful as some of the ones that Germany holds. But as far as the amount that they have more than all non-US NATO countries. And they're not targeted to the north. They're not targeted over to the east. They're targeted to the south, targeted directly towards Israel. Now, the growing sense in Israel is that now that the Syrian civil war is ending, you have this other threat. This other threat of Shiite militias, one in particular, the Iraqi Shiite militia, that is there on by the behest of Iran to try and prop up Assad, that as the Syrian civil war comes to an end, we're going to have this Golan Liberation Brigade, they've been changed their name to, that is going to be mobilized by Iran to do the same thing Hezbollah does, to do the same thing Hamas does, and start lobbing rockets, this time from the Golan Heights back into Israel. Now, it hasn't happened where all these three of these fronts have been attacking Israel. Well, at least it hasn't happened, I think, since the Yom Kippur War. And what would happen if Israel was besieged like this, or they are besieged? What would happen if these armies really do lead a joint attack on Israel? Now, Israel is preparing for that as well. And this kind of surprised me about what they're preparing for. We heard, or I told you about how they are preparing for mass casualties, thousands of casualties in this next bout. If there was an occasion where the Hezbollah and Hamas would decide together to fight against Israel. But then notice this. This is from AP, and this was March 22nd. It says, if Islamist militants in Gaza or Lebanon go to war with Israel, they could find their usual targets empty. Israel is drawing up contingency plans to evacuate up to 250,000 civilians from border communities to protect them from attacks from Hamas, Hezbollah, and other Islamic groups. The mass evacuation would be the biggest in Israel's history, part of a bigger plan where the army works with municipalities to keep civilians safe. Then it continues, each side has warned that a new conflict would be worse than previous ones. And then it says again here in 2017, this is this evacuation plan, which has been codenamed Safe Distance. And this interview to the Israeli, to AP, was given by a senior Israeli officer that couldn't, that gave his name as Colonel Yitzhak Bar. He said, in 2017, all of Israel is under threat. And preparations are underway for Israel to deal with very high amounts of incoming fire. The idea is to remove the threat by not having civilians there. We want a meeting of army and Hezbollah forces and not civilians with Hezbollah forces. So this is real. This is real. They're ready to, the Israeli military is taking, planning this Operation Safe Distance, or codenamed Safe Distance, to prepare for the evacuation of 250,000 Israelis. That's how serious this threat is, especially from the north. Evacuees would be housed in existing infrastructure, including hotels, schools, kibbutz, guest houses, he said. This, again, was Colonel Yitzhak Bar. And then he talks about in places where we understand there is a great danger to civilians, for example, where we won't be able to supply defenses or supply deterrence, we will evacuate. There will be an order for Israelis to evacuate from the north, and now perhaps in the south as well, if Hamas is able to sneak under Iron Dome with these projectiles that pack a lot of punch. I mean, even during the 2014 war and the Gaza war, a lot of the communities around Gaza were evacuated at that point anyway. But this is serious. This is, when we start talking about the largest mass evacuation in Israel's history, this is a pretty big deal. Pretty big deal. And we just have to ask ourselves, with Israel being besieged the way it is right now, are we heading in the right direction? The Lebanon 3, that surely will come, that Hezbollah has been preparing for. It's going to be more deadly. They're talking about thousands of casualties. They're talking about mass evacuations of 250,000 people. Then in the Gaza Strip, or on the Gaza Strip, where we're talking about Hamas being able to already infiltrate Israel through these tunnels. We're talking about them to being able to fire just as many as last time projectiles into Israel. Things aren't getting better. Things are getting worse. Now, people, like the big saying of what happens every couple of years in the Gaza Strip is that we just need to go and mow the grass. We need to mow the grass. And that just means that, well, Hamas gets a little bit bigger, a little unsightly. They fire a few too many rockets, and we have to go in there, and we are going to have some military deaths. There will be some civilian casualties. We'll knock out their weapon systems. We'll wait a couple of years, and we'll do the same thing again. And I think that many Israelis have just settled with that. That indefinitely, from now on, there will be a mowing of the grass with Hamas. Well, right now, that might be true of Hamas. You might be able to do that with Hamas. But the grass is pretty tall in the northern border of Israel. I mean, there's a forest there. It'll be difficult to mow that grass when they have 150,000 rockets that are aimed, primed, ready to go down against Israel. I'm sure they won't be able to fire every single one of those at once. But that is the amount that they have. Now, what is the solution to this? Really, if you look back at these two territories, they're territories that Israel withdrew from. They're two territories that we said back in the early 1990s that nothing is going to come, nothing good is going to come from Israel's policy of withdrawal from the Gaza Strip, from southern Lebanon. And now we find those areas overrun with terrorists, with rockets that are pointed towards Israel. Israel will do its best to defend itself. It will come up with David's sling, the Iron Dome, the Arrow system. It will come up with its evacuation plans. But in the end, those things, they're just band-aids. It's just mowing the grass. And perhaps we get to the point where the mower isn't big enough. And then what happens? Well, there are some solutions for Israel if they would heed them. If they would look back in history, not even biblical history, look back what happened in the War of Independence. If you look back to the Six-Day War, there were dramatic miracles that God gave Israel to ensure that they were militarily victorious. And you know what? Israel knew it. Israel knew that they had been delivered. But then if you want to go back towards biblical times, there is example after example of Israel being besieged. The most pertinent one that comes to my mind is the example of Nehemiah, and how he was besieged on all sides, to the north by the Samaritans, to the east by the Ammonites, to the Philistine region again, was still anti-province of Yehud, anti-Jew. And then towards the south as well in Arabia, you had Geshem down there, the governor of Arabia. And all of these territories surrounding Israel or Yehud, surrounding Nehemiah's Jerusalem, Nehemiah's province, they were ready to come fight against him. They were ready to attack. They were conspiring against him. They were trying to work out peace deals with them. And yet Nehemiah wouldn't have it. He wouldn't have it. But if you read that book, and I encourage you to do so, read Nehemiah, you'll see where he directed his plea for help. It wasn't to a new missile system. It wasn't to at the altar of the Iron Dome. It was towards the great God, who was the only one that could bring the Jews deliverance then, and the only one that can bring them deliverance today. Now, whether or not the state of Israel calls on God's help for deliverance, his protection in the situation that they now face or not, God is working out his plan. He is. And even these terrorist groups on Israel's border currently besieging this tiny nation, they are a part of that plan. They are a part of that plan. If you want to understand more of this prophetic time sequence that is, believe it or not, leading to the coming of the Messiah. That's what we're talking about here when we're looking at nations or proxies of the Iranians or other states besieging Israel. We are looking at Bible prophecy. Now, I haven't given those Bible prophecies to you today, but if you want to understand more, if you want to understand how the march of fulfillment of Bible prophecy is going forward, and if you want to understand what you can do personally to escape it, you can request and read for free this book, Jerusalem in Prophecy. Jerusalem in Prophecy, written by our editor-in-chief of Watch Jerusalem, Gerald Flory. It has been written back in the early 90s and then updated since. But the prophecies themselves, they haven't been updated because that's a sure word of God going back thousands of years. Now, if you read that book, you're going to see that while things might look dark today and things do look difficult on the horizon for Israel, there is a very bright, bright future for Israelis as well as even these other nations that are threatening to attack them. Thanks for listening once again to Watch Jerusalem. This is the end of our show. If you'd like to send us some feedback, you can do that by sending emails to letters@watchjerusalem.co.il. Or if you're not too keen going online every day, then we can send you our newsletter once per week every Friday morning in Jerusalem and update you on the articles that you missed. Simply go to watchjerusalem.co.il and click on the newsletter tab in the top right-hand corner, fill in your email address, and we'll make sure you get that once a week. Thanks again for listening. We'll catch you next time.